Life of Pi isn't just a survival tale. It's a philosophical exploration that has captivated millions since its 2002 publication. This Man Booker Prize winner became an international sensation, later adapted into an Academy Award-winning film by Ang Lee. Barack Obama famously called it an elegant proof of God and the power of storytelling, while celebrities from Oprah Winfrey to Emma Watson have praised its spiritual depth. What makes this story so compelling is how it transforms a seemingly impossible scenario, a boy trapped on a lifeboat with a Bengal tiger, into a profound meditation on faith, survival, and the stories we choose to believe. Jan Martel begins with a disarming confession. His previous novel had failed, leaving him restless and hungry, both literally and creatively. During his travels in India, he encounters an elderly man who promises a story that will make you believe in God. This leads him to Piscine Molitor Patel, a middle-aged Indian man living quietly in Canada. The narrative structure immediately challenges our understanding of truth. Is this a novel masquerading as a true account? A true account disguised as fiction? This ambiguity becomes the foundation for everything that follows. Pi himself appears as an enigma, a practicing Hindu, Christian, and Muslim who studied both zoology and religion at university. His home is a shrine to religious diversity, with symbols from multiple faiths coexisting harmoniously. The author establishes Pi as someone who has survived something extraordinary but has found a way to integrate his trauma into a life of quiet dignity. We learn he lives with his wife Mina, son Nikhil, daughter Usha, and pets. A normal family life that somehow emerged from the extraordinary tale we're about to hear. This framing device accomplishes something crucial. It promises salvation before the ordeal begins. Whatever horrors await in Pi's story, we know he survives to tell the tale. Born Piscine Molitor Patel, named after a Parisian swimming pool, Pi grows up in Pondicherry, India, where his father runs the local zoo. His childhood is idyllic, waking to lion roars, observing exotic animals, and developing a sophisticated understanding of animal behavior. Pi's father teaches him a brutal but necessary lesson about respecting dangerous animals by forcing him to witness a tiger devouring a goat, a scene that foreshadows Pi's later relationship with Richard Parker. Pi's spiritual journey begins when his aunt introduces him to Hinduism as an infant. The sensory experiences of Hindu temples, the red kumkum powder, yellow turmeric, garlands of flowers, create his foundational understanding of divinity. But Pi's spiritual hunger isn't satisfied by a single tradition. At 14, he encounters Christianity through Father Martin, who explains that God's love manifested through Christ's sacrifice. Though initially skeptical, Pi is moved by this troublesome rabbi and declares, "I would like to be a Christian, please." Islam follows shortly after when Pi discovers a Muslim baker praying in his shop. Fascinated by the baker's devotion and the physical prayer ritual that seems like hot weather yoga for Bedouins, Pi begins studying with this Sufi mystic. Each religious tradition offers Pi something unique. Hinduism provides cosmic understanding, Christianity offers divine love, and Islam brings disciplined devotion. Pi's pluralistic faith practice eventually creates conflict when his three religious mentors discover they've been sharing a disciple. They confront Pi's secular parents, insisting he must choose one faith. Pi resists this demand, asking his mother, "If there's only one nation in the sky, shouldn't all passports be valid for it?" This question encapsulates Pi's spiritual philosophy, that different religions are simply different paths to the same divine reality. In the mid-1970s, India undergoes a period of intense political upheaval during Indira Gandhi's emergency rule. The period is marked by civil rights suspensions, press censorship, and widespread arrests of political opponents. This climate of uncertainty and fear particularly affects middle-class business owners like Pi's father, who witnesses firsthand how government overreach threatens private enterprise and personal freedoms. Pi's father, a pragmatic businessman who had built the Pondicherry Zoo from scratch, carefully observes these developments with growing concern. The decision to sell the zoo and emigrate to Canada comes after months of deliberation, driven by both political anxiety and the promise of better opportunities abroad. The process of selling the zoo proves complex, involving lengthy negotiations with various American zoos for the animal's placement. Each animal requires specific transportation arrangements and import permits, creating a logistical puzzle that occupies the family for months. For 16-year-old Pi, the news of departure triggers a profound emotional crisis. He must bid farewell to the three religious mentors who shaped his spiritual journey, the priest, the imam, and the pandit, each of whom had become a fundamental part of his identity. His daily routines of prayer at the temple, mosque, and church must end. His school friends, particularly his closest confidant Ravi, will become memories. The zoo animals, which Pi had grown up alongside and considered extended family, are gradually shipped away to their new homes across the ocean. The family's departure aboard the Japanese cargo ship Tsim-Tsim marks a pivotal moment. The vessel, a massive freighter carrying cargo containers and several of their remaining zoo animals, represents both an end and a beginning. Pi describes the departure with bittersweet emotion. "The sun shone, the breeze was steady, seagulls shrieked overhead, and I felt terribly excited." He stands on deck watching Pondicherry's shoreline recede, the Marina Beach lighthouse growing smaller, while his mother offers prayers for a safe journey, and his father discusses arrangements with the ship's crew. This moment of optimism and adventure, tinged with the sadness of farewell, stands in stark contrast to the catastrophic events that will follow, making it all the more poignant in retrospect. The family carries with them carefully selected belongings, documents, and hopes for a new life in Canada, unaware that their planned journey of migration will transform into something far more extraordinary and challenging than they could ever have imagined. 4 days after departing from Manila's bustling port, catastrophe strikes in the dead of night. Pi, awakened by unusual creaking sounds and the violent pitching of the ship, ventures from his bunk onto the rain-slick deck. The Tsim-Tsim, a massive Japanese cargo vessel carrying both the Patel family and their zoo animals to Canada, is taking on water at an alarming rate. The storm rages with mounting intensity, waves crash over the railings, and the ship lists dangerously to one side. In the ensuing pandemonium, confused crew members, acting more on instinct than protocol, roughly grab Pi and forcefully throw him into a lifeboat. The boat drops chaotically into the churning ocean, leaving Pi alone and terrified as he watches his world literally sink before his eyes. Through the driving rain and darkness, he witnesses an extraordinary sequence of events. A zebra, panicked and injured, leaps from the tilting deck and crashes into his lifeboat. Soon after, a spotted hyena, its eyes wild with fear, somehow makes its way aboard. Then, in an almost surreal moment, Orange Juice, a mature female orangutan whom Pi has known since childhood, drifts toward the boat atop a bundle of bananas, her orange fur stark against the dark waters. The most terrifying arrival comes last. Richard Parker, the magnificent 450-pound Bengal tiger from their zoo, powers through the waves with surprising grace and pulls himself aboard. The tiger's presence transforms the lifeboat from a refuge into a potential death trap, as Pi realizes he's now trapped in a tiny space with one of nature's most efficient predators. The Tsim-Tsim's final moments are etched forever in Pi's memory. The lights flickering out deck by deck, the horrible groaning of twisting metal, and finally, the massive ship slipping beneath the waves, taking with it Pi's entire family, his practical father, his gentle mother, and his annoying but beloved brother Ravi. In one devastating moment, Pi loses not just his family, but his entire world, his home, his possessions, his sense of security, and any semblance of normal life. The teenage boy finds himself adrift on the vast Pacific Ocean, surrounded by dangerous wild animals, with no survival training and no rescue in sight. As dawn breaks over the empty horizon, Pi faces an impossible situation. He must somehow survive not only the natural threats of the ocean, but also the immediate danger posed by his fellow castaways, particularly the lethal presence of Richard Parker. This moment marks the beginning of what will become a 227-day ordeal that will test the limits of his physical endurance, mental resilience, and spiritual faith. The lifeboat quickly becomes a microcosm of nature's brutal hierarchy, transforming into a floating arena where the raw dynamics of predator and prey play out in merciless detail. The hyena, embodying opportunistic cruelty in its purest form, demonstrates the calculated patience of a natural killer. It first circles the injured zebra, testing boundaries and waiting for the perfect moment to strike. Over several agonizing days, the hyena systematically devours the zebra alive, starting with its broken leg, in a display of savagery that shatters Pi's previous conceptions of animal behavior. When the hyena turns its attention to orange juice, the scene becomes even more poignant. The maternal orangutan, typically gentle and intelligent, reveals an unexpected ferocity in her fight for survival. She bares her teeth and raises her arms in defensive displays, showing remarkable courage against the hyena's attacks. Her resistance, though ultimately futile, demonstrates the primal will to survive that exists in all creatures. Pi watches this transformation of a peaceful vegetarian into a fighting beast with a mixture of awe and horror, forcing him to confront the stark reality that exists beyond the sanitized confines of zoo enclosures. The emergence of Richard Parker from beneath the tarpaulin marks a dramatic shift in the power dynamics. The Bengal tiger's attack on the hyena is swift, efficient, and absolute, a demonstration of nature's true apex predator at work. This establishes the final hierarchy that will govern the lifeboat. Richard Parker as the undisputed physical power, with Pi forced to find his place within this dangerous new reality. Pi's zoological knowledge, once academic, becomes his literal lifeline. His understanding of animal behavior, particularly of cats and their territorial nature, proves invaluable. He recognizes that Richard Parker, having been raised in captivity, retains certain conditioned responses to human authority and routine. This crucial insight leads Pi to develop a sophisticated survival strategy. Rather than attempting to overpower the tiger, an impossible task, he works to establish himself as the alpha figure through careful psychological manipulation. Pi implements a three-pronged approach to dominance, using the tiger's seasickness to his advantage during storms, marking territory through strategic placement of urine, and maintaining strict control over food distribution. He creates a complex system of whistles and rewards, essentially establishing himself as the source of order and sustenance. This delicate balance never eliminates the constant threat. Richard Parker remains capable of killing Pi at any moment, but it creates enough structure for coexistence. Pi's understanding that survival requires partnership rather than competition becomes his fundamental insight. I had to tame him. It wasn't him or me, but him and me. This realization transforms their relationship from one of pure antagonism to a complex interdependence that would sustain them both through their ordeal. Pi's 227 days at sea become a masterclass in human resilience. He creates a separate raft tethered to the lifeboat, establishes a territory division with Richard Parker, and develops systems for collecting rainwater and catching fish. The survival manual becomes his Bible, though it offers no advice on establishing alpha-omega relationships with lifeboat pests. The physical challenges are immense. Saltwater boils cover his body, the sun blisters his skin, and hunger becomes a constant companion. When his rations run out, Pi transforms from a vegetarian into a resourceful hunter, catching fish, turtles, and even sharks with his bare hands. He describes killing his first fish with tears streaming down his face, but necessity quickly overcomes moral qualms. Equally challenging is the psychological battle. Pi fights against despair through strict routine and religious practice. He conducts improvised rituals from all three of his faiths, though sometimes his prayers become desperate assertions. This is God's hat. This is God's attire. This is God's cat. When faith falters, Pi reminds himself that life on a lifeboat isn't much of a life, but it is life. Richard Parker, initially Pi's greatest threat, becomes paradoxically essential to his survival. The tiger's presence forces Pi to remain vigilant and purposeful. Without Richard Parker, I wouldn't be alive today to tell you my story. Their relationship evolves into something approaching companionship, with Pi even declaring, "I love you," to the tiger after a passing ship fails to notice them. After 227 days at sea, Pi discovers an extraordinary floating island made entirely of algae, stretching as far as the eye can see, with a series of freshwater ponds dotting its center. This surreal environment, populated by tens of thousands of meerkats, initially appears as divine intervention. The island's surface is a dense matrix of algae and vegetation that can support human weight, creating a springy, carpet-like terrain that defies natural laws. Pi, severely malnourished and dehydrated, regains his strength by consuming the algae's tender new growth and drinking the crystal-clear fresh water, while Richard Parker efficiently hunts the unusually docile meerkats that seem to have no fear of the tiger. The island's ecosystem appears perfectly designed for survival, with its self-sustaining food sources and abundant fresh water. During daylight hours, the meerkats display fascinating social behaviors, working in coordinated groups and showing no signs of typical prey animal wariness. Pi observes their routines with growing curiosity, noting how they seem to operate with clockwork precision, especially as evening approaches. However, Pi's paradise soon reveals its sinister nature. Through careful observation, he discovers the island's horrifying secret. It is carnivorous, producing highly acidic conditions at night that dissolve any organic matter remaining on its surface. The meerkats, having evolved alongside this phenomenon, survive by climbing into the island's trees en masse as darkness falls, while Richard Parker, guided by animal instinct, returns to the safety of the lifeboat each evening. The acid's effects are so complete that by morning, no trace remains of anything left on the ground. The true horror of the island's nature becomes undeniable when Pi discovers what appears to be a fruit in one of the trees, a tightly wrapped leaf containing human teeth, presumably from previous castaways who succumbed to the island's deceptive sanctuary. This grim discovery forces Pi to confront the reality that the island, despite its life-giving properties during the day, is ultimately a deadly trap. Despite the relative comfort and abundance the island offers, Pi makes the crucial decision to leave this deceptive paradise and return to the honest dangers of the open sea. This episode serves as a powerful metaphor for life's deeper truths. Sometimes apparent salvation comes with hidden costs, and comfortable stagnation can be more dangerous than acknowledged hardship. The island represents the seductive temptation to surrender to false security rather than continuing the difficult journey toward true redemption and authentic survival. It illustrates how the path to salvation, sometimes rejecting comfort in favor of facing the unknown with courage and determination. When Pi finally reaches the shores of Mexico, he is barely alive, emaciated, unable to walk, and nearly blind from exposure. His body, ravaged by 227 days at sea, has been reduced to little more than skin stretched over bones. His muscles have atrophied to the point where even lifting his arms requires tremendous effort, and his salt-damaged eyes can barely distinguish shapes in the bright Mexican sunlight. Richard Parker, though equally diminished but still maintaining his predatory presence, demonstrates his wild nature one final time. Without hesitation or ceremony, the tiger leaps from the boat and disappears into the dense Mexican jungle, never once turning to acknowledge the months of shared survival. This abrupt separation devastates Pi, who had come to view their relationship as something transcendent. I've never forgiven him for not turning back to acknowledge our relationship. The tiger's departure embodies the harsh reality that wild animals, despite our human tendency to anthropomorphize them, remain true to their nature. Local villagers discover Pai on the beach, their initial disbelief turning to compassion at the sight of this skeletal figure barely clinging to life. They carefully bathe his salt-encrusted body, provide him with clean clothes, and offer him small portions of food, understanding that his starved system cannot handle large meals. Their gentle care marks Pai's gradual return to human society after months of isolation. Mexican authorities arrange for his transfer to a hospital, where doctors treat his severe dehydration, malnutrition, and numerous physical ailments. Canadian officials soon arrive to care for their young citizen, bringing news of his family's fate and helping him process the bureaucratic aftermath of his ordeal. However, the arrival of Japanese maritime investigators from the Tsim Shipping Company marks a turning point in Pai's narrative. Their questioning about the ship sinking forces Pai to confront not just the facts of his survival, but the nature of truth and belief itself, leading to the story's most provocative and philosophical turn. The beach becomes both an ending and a beginning, the conclusion of his physical journey, but the start of his struggle to make others understand and believe his extraordinary tale of survival. The Japanese officials, Mr. Okamoto and Mr. Chiba, after listening patiently to Pai's incredible tale of survival with a Bengal tiger, express their skepticism. Their disbelief centers particularly on the improbability of coexisting with such a dangerous predator for 227 days at sea. When they press Pai for what really happened, he reluctantly shares a darker, more brutal alternative version. The lifeboat contained four human survivors, himself, his mother, a Chinese sailor with a broken leg, and the ship's cook, a crude and violent man who would prove to be the architect of unimaginable horror. In this second version, desperation leads to savagery. The cook, driven by hunger and moral degradation, first amputates the injured sailor's leg under the pretense of helping him, only to use the flesh for fishing bait. When the sailor dies, the cook butchers and consumes his body. Pai's mother, horrified by these acts of cannibalism, confronts the cook, leading to a violent altercation that ends with her murder. Finally, Pai, transformed by grief and rage, kills the cook and survives alone, haunted by what he had to become to stay alive. The parallel between the two stories emerges with devastating clarity. The cook corresponds to the vicious hyena, the helpless sailor mirrors the wounded zebra, Pai's mother equates to the maternal orangutan orange juice, and Richard Parker represents Pai's own savage survival instinct, the part of himself he needed to embrace yet struggles to face. The tiger story becomes a psychological shield, a way to process trauma through metaphor and distance. When the officials must write their report and are forced to choose between the two versions, they select the animal story, despite its apparent implausibility. Pai's response, "Thank you, and so it goes with God," elevates the entire narrative into a profound meditation on faith. Just as the officials choose the more bearable version of Pai's ordeal, humans often embrace faith's more beautiful explanations for life's mysteries over stark scientific materialism. This masterful narrative twist transforms the novel from a simple survival story into a complex exploration of how humans construct meaning from chaos. Pai suggests that faith operates on the same principle. When absolute proof is impossible, we gravitate towards stories that provide deeper meaning and hope, even if they challenge rational explanation. As Pai argues earlier in the novel, if you stumble at mere believability, what are you living for? The question resonates beyond the immediate context, challenging readers to examine their own choices between pragmatic truth and meaningful belief. Life of Pai ultimately celebrates the human capacity to transform suffering into meaningful narrative. Pai survives not just physically, but spiritually by creating a story he can live with. Whether the tiger was real or metaphorical becomes less important than what Richard Parker represents. The part of ourselves that emerge in extreme circumstances, both terrifying and necessary for survival. The novel suggests that all religious traditions function as stories that help us make sense of life's randomness and cruelty. Pi's multiple religious practices aren't contradictory, but complementary. Different narratives addressing the same fundamental human needs for meaning, comfort, and transcendence. In the end, Pi's journey becomes a parable about choosing how we frame our experiences. When faced with unbearable reality, we have two options. We can see only the brutal facts of our suffering, or we can find the larger meaning that makes that suffering bearable. As Pi tells the Japanese officials, "Isn't telling about something, using words, English or Japanese, already something of an invention? Isn't just looking upon this world already something of an invention?" Through Pi's extraordinary journey, Martel invites us to consider how the stories we tell about ourselves, about God, about life's purpose, shape our reality. The novel's enduring appeal lies in this invitation to embrace the more beautiful story, not because it's necessarily true in a factual sense, but because it helps us survive and find meaning in an often chaotic and painful world.